everyone. Thank you for joining me and Abby today. We are recording this podcast as part of the Exchange Autumn Conference series, which is focused on transitions for young people. Today we're going to be recording a podcast about kinship care. The title of the podcast is Do You Ever Really Leave Care When Your Carer Is a Family Member? Transitions in Kinship Care. So I am Lorna Stabler. I work at Cascade Research Centre at Cardiff University, and I'm currently carrying out a PhD looking at the experiences of sibling kinship carers. I have my own experience of spending some time in kinship care with my grandparents when I was a small child, and then also becoming a registered friends and family foster carer for my younger brother when I was in my early 20s. I'm just going to pass over so Abby can introduce herself now.
Thank you. Hello. Yeah, my name is Abby Toner and I'm a first year PhD student and an occasional lecturer as well at the University of Suffolk. I am also looking into a very similar topic to Lorna and looking to hear the experiences of siblings in kinship care, not just siblings, but also partners and social workers. So, and the reason I'm interested in that topic is because at the age of 22, I became a full-time kinship caregiver for my sister, with my partner at the time, now husband.
Thanks for that, Abby. So today, really, we're just going to have a conversation because when this conference series was announced, I really thought it would be interesting for the two of us, because I know we've talked quite a lot about kinship care and how it kind of fits into this spectrum of kind of alternative care arrangements. And actually some of the language around kind of transitions and leaving care, quite often people will talk about kinship care as kind of fitting into a similar model as foster care. But actually when you kind of unpick some of the language and some of the kind of discussions around transitions, it starts to become a little bit strange and irrelevant when you think about kind of your own family and your own experience. So I was just thinking, Abby, it would be really good to chat through, what do you think the main transition points might be for children in care? So, in kinship care. So I know in, you know, foster care, we maybe talk about things like leaving care or also kind of transitioning from having a social worker to a personal advisor, things like independence. But also, you know, in the wider population, we talk about things like, you know, going from primary school to high school and things like that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this and I'm reflecting on kind of my experience, but also my experience with, I've worked with grandparent kinship caregivers, supporting their grandchildren. So I've never actually worked with sibling kinship families, but I've only worked with grandparent kinship families. And I think with my understanding also about the research in this field, my practice experience, and then how it was for myself, I think that the initial transition into kinship care is extremely difficult for many families. I think that it's quite an anxiety-producing time because the reasons that children go into kinship care can be as a result of parental substance misuse, domestic violence, imprisonment. It can be because of the death or one or both parents or abuse for children. So I think that the transition actually firstly into kinship care is a very difficult and traumatic time. That's often being reported, hasn't it, in the research, Lorna?
Yeah, I think it's a really important point, isn't it? Because I think sometimes people, there can be this assumption made that because a child remains within their own family, that that's less of a difficult transition for them. But, you know, as the research shows, quite often, you know, even if there is an existing relationship there between the kinship carer and the child, it's not a parental relationship. And sometimes it's also a very tenuous relationship. And I think a lot of the research kind of reports that kinship carers really have very little, you know, support in that period and also to make that decision. And, you know, for all that kinship carers might get, I think children get even less support at that point.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's hard to sort of to talk about children and find out what's going on for the caregiver as well, isn't it? In terms of, like you say, they're sometimes misinformed as to how long that arrangement will be. And that's quite commonly reported, isn't it? And I think it's that kind of anxiety and sometimes coupled with this existing relationship with the parent or parents can create a lot of conflict for children. They're exposed to still sometimes, arguments and sometimes even violence has been reported. So I think that that kind of traumatic time doesn't really end, does it? It begins sometimes from a traumatic sort of episode or series of episodes, doesn't it? And then I think that that can continue for children. I think that can be very difficult for them. But again, with kinship care, that's so different for each child, what that experience might look like.
And I think as well, I was on a webinar the other day. I'm not sure if you joined it, that was held by the Review of Children's Social Care, and they heard from a lot of different experiences. But one of the things that really was striking was how many carers, especially grandparent carers, were talking about, not even having a bed, like sleeping on a sofa, so that the child could have a bedroom, and not having any kind of the appropriate things that you would need for a child. And I think sometimes there's this assumption that because, particularly with grandparent carers, because they've been parents before, somehow they have everything that they could need to take on that role at that point, which is just, not realistic. Not many people keep baby clothes once their children are adults.
Yeah, no, it's very true, isn't it? My sister, before she moved in with me, was in kinship care with our grandparent as well. And it's the silly things, isn't it? The small things that children need. I hear that it's reported about beds, like you said. And yeah, having a bedroom, maybe toys, clothing. Yeah, and it sometimes can happen so quickly, that sort of move, that there isn't a readiness. And I think that's what is the problem, that if caregivers are not feeling ready for that form of caregiving, like you say, kinship care, we don't really understand what that feels like for the child.
Yeah, I think it's one of the really interesting pieces of research at the moment in kinship care, I think, is Paul Shuttleworth's PhD, and actually just that idea of, children, once they are in kinship care, there's this idea that now they're in some kind of permanent home, or they have stability, but actually all of the time they're thinking about, what's the next move, what would happen if, if something happened in this situation, where would I go? And actually, I think, once young people, children and young people have experienced that kind of almost, change in what they thought was kind of, normal or stable or, whatever, in their kind of parents' home, like they do have that in mind as they grow up, where next? So yeah, it's that idea they can have quite like multiple moves, I guess, but that actually that's something that can be, part of a normal family life.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think as that just speaks to me about that kind of anxiety, isn't it? And there's no planning for if my caregiver was sick, where would I go? What would happen? And I think that's sort of perhaps more complicated. I've had with children that I have worked with who are remaining in grandparent kinship care have spoken about that anxiety because they have an existing relationship with their parent and that has continued, and it's kind of this, where will I go? And sometimes for that child that I'm thinking of in mind would often report fears of her own mother would say, you'll come back and live with me one day. And it's that kind of still never knowing if I am permanently here or not. And I think that's quite true within informal kinship caregiving.
I guess one of the things that's really struck me talking to kinship carers as well is just the lack of knowledge that people have, within social work, definitely, but within those kind of wider groups as well. So within schools and health, and even within people's local communities. Yeah, so I was just wondering, yeah, I know there has been a lot of work from organisations like Kinship, but how much recognition do you think there is that children are going through these quite, you know, completely life-changing transitions in kinship care.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's very little spoken about. I mean, I didn't even know that what my arrangement was with my sister was even called kinship at the time. And that was, you know, my own sort of understanding at the time. I didn't really, I think that's the problem with families, isn't it? We just think, well, family care, you know, she's my sister, she's in my family. And there isn't, if there are no safety concerns, I suppose you're less inclined to maybe seek support, but you don't know where to go to seek that support. And I think that's true. Many families don't understand, you know, even just for their own children who are not in kinship care, for example, and you're looking for emotional support, it's not clear sort of where you go, you know. So if a child is in school, I suppose the first point of call is school, and you have sort of positions like family liaisons or support workers within schools, and school nurses are also, you know, can come in and speak to children. But it's, who do you tell? Where do you go? But there's that fear, isn't there, that I know is reported, that caregivers are less, some caregivers are less inclined to seek support when they're struggling with their kinship child or young person, because they fear it will raise concerns about their own parenting. And then they don't, which I think is really very sad, because they're, you know, perhaps lots of children in and young people in kinship placements who maybe are really struggling and they do need that support. And, you know, either the caregiver doesn't know where to go or is too fearful to go anywhere, which is really sad that there isn't a sort of formalised route specific for kinship families.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it does come back to a lot of assumptions that are kind of made about kinship families, that, you know, there's the support there within the family. So I know, you know, when my brother first came to live with me, we'd both grown up separately. So we'd grown up, you know, in care, but separately. So there was nothing, you know, that kind of helped us or supported us to develop that relationship that was very different from what we'd had previously. You know, actually, we were then in a position where I was setting rules and, you know, boundaries and whatnot that were going to be very different from what he was used to, but also just very different from what people would expect from a brother-sister relationship. And then add into that, you know, some of the difficult experiences we'd both had growing up. There wasn't anything that, you know, I don't think there was any recognition or support at that point that maybe this was a particular period in which, you know, probably some family therapy would have been really helpful, just to help kind of think through how you forge that new identity and how you negotiate, you know, roles within the family. I think, yeah, there's almost this kind of understanding that that will happen naturally. But, you know, kinship families, as much as, you know, we are normal families, also, you know, we don't necessarily fit into the structures of society. So, you know, that whole idea about, you know, who's got, you know, parental responsibility and who can, you know, sign the forms at school, you know, that's not always that clear.
No, it really isn't. You're right. I reflect on what you're saying, because I felt exactly the same, that relationship. Just going back to that, the relationship shifting from a sibling or whatever you had before to some sort of parent, but not quite a parent, sometimes, you know, is really difficult. I can recall that, you know, my sister telling me once that I acted, and so I was 20 at the in my 20s at the time, telling me, shouting at me that I acted like a 40-year-old, is what she said. And, you know, I was like, well, I have the responsibilities of a 40-year-old. You know, I shouted that back to her. And it was this strange relationship that sometimes I think I don't know if it ever felt quite, you don't really have a sort of a firm identity in that. It just kind of kept shifting. But I think very quickly you lose that kind of, I could be that fun sibling. That kind of got lost very quickly, because as soon as that child moves in, you are responsible. And parenting them through the teenage years, when you've only just come out of the teenage years yourself, because we were similar ages, weren't we, Lorna? It's challenging.
And I guess as well, you know, normally, you know, when, you know, I'm not a parent, I know you are, but when people become parents, you know, they become parents to to newborns. It's not that often that people immediately become a parent to a teenager. You know, usually you have some preparation before the teenage point to figure out what you're going to do at that point. And I think, I don't know, I know I felt a lot of, you know, I don't know if guilt's the right word, but I did feel a lot of the time like I wasn't doing the best job I could be doing. But a lot of the time that was because, you know, I was, you know, in my early 20s and there was just not that recognition and support around. You know, I didn't know, the same as you, even though I'd gone through that kind of formal assessment, I didn't know that, you know, what I was a kinship carer. So I do think that there is, you know, work being done on raising recognition. But yeah, there's definitely still a long way to go there.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right, you know, in terms of the kind of, it's just so much uncertainty, I think, from that beginning transition point. And then, like you say, as you start to adjust to this role, you don't know, like you say, who's got parental responsibility. You don't, you know, you unless you've got a formalized order, like an SGO, which obviously they're more recent. They weren't around when I was looking after my sister, and we had an informal arrangement. So for, you know, informal kinship families, they're just, again, looking after a relative child, and kind of have to negotiate these things themselves, don't they? You know, within schools, I'll sign that as their guardian, because often school forms say parent/guardian. And I think that lack of recognition is difficult. You know, because you don't know where you fit. You don't know, perhaps, that many families doing this right now perhaps are unfamiliar with the term kinship caregiver. And for the child as well, what do they say at school? What do they tell their friends? You know, and I've worked with children who have been quite young when they've been placed with their grandparent. So they would call their sort of nanny, if you like, or grandmother, they would call them mother, some of them, with their name at the end, you know, so or mummy Abby, for example. That would be kind of how they would identify, because they still had relationships with their parents. That's how they'd distinguish the difference. And they sometimes spoke that it was just easier to, you know, rather than call them in the playground their nan or grandmother, they felt it was easier to give them that kind of name, really, because of the commitments and the role that they play in their lives.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think, you know, children do figure out a way that, you know, family makes sense to them, because it's just what they're used to, right? And I think it's one of the things that is really missing in the research so far, just like how those identities are constructed and how children do come to understand, you know, the different roles that people play. And then also, you know, how they are reflected in the world around people. You know, it's very rare that you see stories of kinship families. You know, I feel like there has been much more recognition and kind of, you know, widespread kind of media recognition of things like adoption or even fostering. But actually, you know, even though kinship care is far more common than either of those routes, you know, you very rarely see it on the TV. And if you do, it's not kind of named as such, I guess. It's just kind of, oh, you know, they're staying with their auntie for a little while. Which is fine, and I think it should be normalized, but also I think it's hard for people to recognize, you know, themselves and realize that it's such a common occurrence.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it is far more common, and I do think that raising of awareness does help, I think, with understanding who, you know, their individual identities, you know, and sometimes those arrangements are short term, like you say, it can be for a little while, and people can move through different relative caregivers in kinship care, can't they? Similarly, like with my sister, that happened, and that's the problem, is we don't know how common it really is, do we? Because it's, like you say, it can happen for short periods, long periods of a child's life, and there's no longitudinal research, is there, in the UK to sort of follow somebody's, or, you know, many kinship journeys, so we can really understand the kind of variation and the support that they would both need, or the whole family.
I think even, you talk about kind of SGOs, and that's kind of seen as, almost akin to adoption for kinship families. But, we don't even know, once that special guardianship order is granted, if the child remains there. Down the line, we just don't really know, what is happening with children and young people who are in kinship care, and therefore it's really hard to know what support is needed. I guess the next thing I wanted to talk about actually was what might be helpful for children in kinship care at those times of transition that we've talked about. So going into kinship care, but also maybe moving from one kind of relative to another relative, but I guess mainly, also those things, those kind of developmental transitions, so moving from childhood into teenage years, and from primary school to high school. I think one of the things that a lot of kinship carers report is, how supportive primary schools can be, because it's smaller and more pastoral. But once a young person goes to high school, it's a much bigger environment, and maybe harder to have those, personal connections with teachers, where teachers really understand what's going on at home.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was reflecting on my own experience of the times in which I think that were difficult transitions for my sister. But she was sort of 14 when she came into caregiving with us. So she'd just gone into high school when things became really difficult for her. And I think that there's a lot of stigma around sort of problems within families still, and social work intervention in families' life. And I think, like you say, when you get into high school, it's a very different time, and children and young people may be less comfortable with identifying their family, as a kinship family, or seeking out support, because it relies on, I think when you're in high school, more so the young person coming to the attention of somebody or putting themselves forward, more so because it's a very sort of independent time, as it's kind of different, like you say, from primary school. So I do think the transitions from primary to high school, definitely, and then on, I think, as it is with children who are care experienced, endings are really important. So and really, really difficult for children and young people. So endings of primary school and moving up to high school can be very difficult. Or some kinship children may have had to move schools coming into kinship, might they? So, that then can be very difficult for them. And I think from my own experience, the move from high school to sixth form was really difficult for my sister. And then sixth form to possibly university at that time, she didn't want to go, and I couldn't understand why at the time. And again, what's been a sort of unsettling for her as to where her home would be. So she stayed with us much longer and decided to stay at home and study at university, because that kind of stability and home life for her was really important. And that will be different, obviously, for children in kinship.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because we have legislation in Wales, the kind of When I'm Ready legislation, which kind of supports children who are in foster care to remain with their foster carer for a set period of time after 18, depending on whether or not they're in education and employment. Theoretically, it could also apply to kind of those kind of formal kinship care arrangements. But I guess for me, so my experience with my brother is that, by the time he kind of got to, 18, he wanted his independence. It's something that I did as well, growing up in care. I kind of wanted my own place. And I guess because I moved around so much and he'd moved around so much, so he moved out, but he didn't necessarily have the skills, to be independent at that age, because I think it's very difficult. So he did end up coming back to live with me when he was in his 20s, and I think, that's something that happens, you know, all the time with families. You know, you read all of the time in the news that young people are staying with their parents until they're 25, 26, 30. But actually, yeah, for I think for young people, I'm not sure about if it's as much an informal care, but I think it is there in both. There's almost this guilt that young people have when they're in kinship care that they shouldn't stay, they shouldn't outstay their welcome. And actually I think there just needs to be a lot more support for children and young people to just understand, maybe come to terms with what's happened previously and kind of what's led to those circumstances arising, and also just, you know, helping them to realize that, you know, it's not their fault. I think a lot of young people who you know, at some point can't live with their birth parents, whether it's they then end up going through adoption or into kinship care or into foster care, carry around a lot of, you know, kind of self-blame in that area. And I think if that's not addressed early on, particularly at those kind of early transition points, and then, you know, as young people become teenagers and are starting to think about their identity and their place in the world, then I think it has a real knock-on impact on, you know, that kind of later stage of when young people do choose to move out or not, and how they have those conversations and feel about them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think we ignore the fact, and particularly in informal kinship families, that children and young people often have a traumatic precursor before they come into kinship care. And then, you know, once the stability, if you like, is sort of solved in terms of their housing and them living with family, there isn't anything else, unless there are issues raised by, say, school for sort of children, and those things that have happened to the child or young person early on, they do need sort of therapeutic support. I think, like you say, because there can be feelings of guilt, but often children are still affected by the reason as to why they went into kinship care for so long, because relationships still continue, don't they? And we know a lot about the parental relationship can continue, and there's a lot of conflict around contact. Now, if that's continued for a child, you know, and for informal families, that's without any support. So they are left to manage their own contact arrangements. And again, if they are, you know, not positive, but still reinforced, can have a damaging effect on the child and young person as they're trying to grow up and, you know, meet the demands of schooling as they go on, and then appear ready for these points of transition, like you say, into the next step, whether it's sixth form. And actually, you're working with traumatized children, this you know, how are they going to be ready? And like you say, Lorna, my sister wasn't ready to move out, and she stayed with us. We joke about it all the time now, you know, stayed with us a lot longer. But she had that feeling, I think, you know, that, well, you know, I'll just stay, I'm supposed to just stay here until I go off to university. And then that becomes too much for children, that kind of pressure and the fear of the unknown, and there's no support there for that.
Yeah, and I think actually, just coming back to what we were saying earlier about just a lack of actual, you know, physical resources, like, you know, having enough space in the house. Like, if a young person moves in with a family where they don't have their own bedroom, they don't have a bed, you know, there are, you know, the family doesn't have enough money. You know, finances are such a big issue in kinship care. You know, so many people, you know, become parents for a child that they weren't expecting and get absolutely no, you know, financial resource to help with that. And actually, what impact does that have on children and young people when they're thinking about whether or not this is their home for life, or when they should have to move out and things like that? I think, you know, I guess one of the things that comes up as well is how young people, children and young people, feel then when, you know, when their kinship carers have more children, or if they want to move house, or, you know, they get a different job, or they, you know, become ill or become unemployed. You know, there are all of these points that are, you know, transitions in any normal family life that then have this impact on children and kinship children and young people when they think about, okay, so am I going to be part of that home move? Or now that, you know, my carer's lost her job, does that mean I'm going to have to, you know, move out and get a job, or, you know, these additional things that I think we don't really unpick a lot of the time in kinship care, because we just think of it as, you know, a steady, stable home. And I think from a child's perspective, it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's one thing I forgot to mention is that sometimes, you know, kinship children lose siblings, don't they, at the time of going into kinship care. And so they've got and for those that have experienced abandonment as well, they have that to deal with, you know, a lot of loss early on. And you know, they kind of need that bereavement support sometimes. And that can be really difficult for them, you know, losing friendships as well, I think. Can also be difficult.
Yeah, I think the final thing I wanted to talk about, and again, we've definitely kind of touched on all these points as we've gone through, but I just wanted to come back to this idea of leaving care. It's really the kind of phrase that made me want to record this podcast with you, Abby, because I think it's just a term that's thrown around that isn't really thought about in depth when it comes to kinship care. So yeah, I was just wondering what you think of the term leaving care and how it applies in kinship care.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I feel from my personal experience that whilst my sister left my house, she's never really left my family. I think it's kind of interesting how we identify what that leaving care means in kinship, you know. So she's left my full-time caregiving, but in some ways I still care. So some of the roles, if you like, some of the daily things that I did, you know, the emotional support, now it's more practical advice that I still offer. It might be on the phone, you know, when she comes to stay with us, I cook for her, she looks in my fridge, you know, if her car breaks down, she phones my husband. I'm very much, and we're both very much still her parents, and she's still very much part of our family, you know, outside of who lives in my home, and she's the other person that sort of joins on, so she's still part of us, and I don't know how she would identify this idea of leaving care, or anyone for this matter, but because family relationships still continue, well, not, I mean, we don't know, do we, because we don't have sort of research to show what happens after kinship care, to understand this idea of leaving care. But I think relationships, because we're talking about family relationships, I mean, obviously sometimes they don't, kinship care placements will break down and don't go well, but for some children, where they do and they're more positive, does that child ever really leave care? And you go back to that formalised support, don't you, that children who are care experienced get personal advisors, don't they, and pathway plans that sort of begin when they're 15. They plan, you know, for things and this support, and it ends when they're sort of 25 now. So there isn't any of that for kinship children. There isn't any of that planning.
Yeah. And I think it's a really important point as well, because I don't know, like, there's this almost like dearth of language. Like, one of the things I always found really strange was that, you know, if you say you're a parent for life, right? When parents talk about their children, it doesn't matter if their children are 3 or 30 or 60, they're still their children. But as a kinship carer, there's not really any meaning behind, you know, grandma or grandchild or sister or brother or anything like that that can kind of, I don't know, capture that like ongoing kind of caring kind of relationship. So I always struggle with the language of like, what is it, a kinship? Are they my kinship child, or, you know, yeah, and can they still be a kinship child when they're 60? Like for a parent, they can still be, you know, their child until they're, you know, well, always. And I think that's really difficult, because I think you touched on a really good point, like that in kinship care, and I think actually even in formal kinship care, there's not always the same input in terms of planning for the future, and especially when children move kind of from, you know, what would be kinship foster care into an SGO arrangement. There's not necessarily, I think, that same kind of focus on, okay, so what about, you know, what about the future? What about, you know, do you want to go to university? What kind of support would you need for that? And I think, you know, actually, as part of this series as well, me and one of my colleagues, Hannah Bayfield, recorded a podcast talking about what support young people who are care experienced need when going into higher education. And actually, I think there is such a big gap around, you know, children who've grown up in kinship care, whether that's in a formal or an informal relationship. You know, there is this focus on care leavers. Again, I think that's too narrowly defined a lot of the time because there's an age cut off in that. And as we know, you know, a lot of people who are care experienced don't go to university until, you know, they're a bit older. But actually, you know, now there's more of a focus on, you know, looking at young people who are estranged from their families. But I think we really need to just widen the net almost and think about, you know, young people who may have had, for various reasons, but I think kinship care is a really clear one, like a disrupted educational experience, and a kind of disrupted experience with more transitions than young people would normally have to go through often, and kind of what impact that might have on, you know, decisions about going to university, but also what kind of support they might need, you know, in their kind of educational journey. I think, you know, one thing that you touched on about your sister as well is the idea of if you've moved around a lot or you've moved between different homes, going to university and having to move out and move into halls is yet again another, you know, transition. And if you think about it as, you know, some young people who are in kinship care might feel, you know, can they go back once they've made that decision, or is that it? And that, you know, if you put it in that context, you know, it makes moving out a much bigger decision for children in kinship care than it is for, you know, children who live with their parents. I know my partner went back to live with his parents after he left uni for a few months while he decided what he was doing next and applied for jobs. And that was never even, you know, it was never questioned. It never would be.
Yeah, and I think that sort of children, it's kind of the thing that may not be discussed explicitly within families. Now, I know, now looking back with my sister, we had a house move, and we were asking her, are you going to come? And she was very unsure because I think she felt like she shouldn't come because we were about to have another child. And that is those kind of understanding that actually kinship children need to know that stability is there, that there is somewhere to go back to. But that depends on the how positive the kinship family is, doesn't it? And how positive the relationships are within. And I think that, yeah, that's a huge transition point, like you say. The amount of moves that families have, moving into her own flat was a really big deal for her. And yeah, transitions are hard. They're not planned for. They're not supported for sort of informal kinship children. But also, like we mentioned earlier about education, it was making me think about the pupil premium grant that children can get to kind of raise their attainment whilst they're in school. And that was really designed, wasn't it, for children who are care experienced. And it's been extended now, hasn't it? Those who have special guardianship orders, residence orders, or child arrangement orders can apply for this funding. And so, you know, there's this funding money that's supposed to be used for children, for it can be for emotional support within schools to kind of help manage. But I, you know, in practice, I'm not exactly sure that it always goes as it says it should, from what I've read. But yeah, this is for informal kinship families. Yeah, there's a lot of transition points that need more support, and recognizing these difficult moments that are approaching, and the kind of anxiety that it produces for the child.
Yeah, and I think, I guess just to wrap up as well, I think this just brings us back to the start where, you know, we were saying that quite often kinship carers and, you know, children in kinship care have no preparation or information or support or plan to make these decisions about, kinship care and what it's going to look like. So it's also from a kinship carer's perspective, you know, it might be quite hard when, you know, the young person gets to 18 and 19 and 20 and you're thinking, well, maybe I do want to go back to uni or go traveling or, you know, spend some time with my partner or start my own family. And, you know, you don't know, you know, there's no end point. And quite often, you know, kinship carers have, you know, I've spoken particularly with grandparents who said, you know, they just retired and they were just like looking forward to, you know, having a nice, you know, retired life and going on lots of holidays and whatnot. And all of a sudden they have a, you know, a 2-year-old who may be there until they're 18 or 25 or 30. And actually, I think it's so hard to have those conversations in a way that feels, you know, supportive without any kind of input and without any kind of therapy or, you know, external support to make sure that, you know, those conversations can be had in an honest way where everyone's feelings are acknowledged and don't make children and young people feel, you know, unwanted or, you know, like they have to leave, but also that acknowledge, you know, the really big job that kinship carers are doing and taking on with very little support and advice.
Yes, no, I agree. I think that's why sort of the kinship, you know, charity, they're calling for the Kinship Care Act, you know, really emphasises why we need kinship care to be recognised in law and ensure that, you know, kinship carers and children have this support and the information, first of all, you know.
Yeah, to make that decision. Well, I feel like we should probably wrap up there because, you know, people might want to get on with their days. But thank you so much for chatting to me today, Abby. I think it's been really interesting. I think I really wanted to record this because every time we chat about kinship care, I feel like, you know, we can chat for ages. And I quite often think, oh, I wish I was recording this because it's really interesting.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Lovely to speak to you, Abby.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Cascade Talks.
Diolch am wrando ar Cascade Talks. Hoffwn ddweud diolch i Ymchwil Iechyd a Gofal Cymru ac i Lywodraeth Cymru am eu cefnogaeth cyllid.
We'd like to thank Health and Care Research Wales and the Welsh Assembly Government for their funding support. Exchange brings together leading researchers with practitioners and service users to share expertise, research evidence and care experiences. To sign up for free events and access resources, visit exchangewales.org. You can also follow us on Twitter @ Exchange Wales.